I'm still grateful and enthusiastic, and I'm still Richard. Our next session here is a workshop by our friend Charlie from last night on the slogans of the program and how we sometimes get a little confused with them. Charlie has noted a couple of things already here this weekend. One was that Magdalena and I were taking his inventory and decided that he's a talker, and you probably found that out yourselves. Another was the observation that we really try to get our money's worth out of the airfare when we bring somebody in, so we don't let them get by with just one session when we can avoid it. So with that in mind, I would like to welcome Charlie W. back to the podium to talk about the slogans. Hi, everybody. I'm Charlie.
Hi, Charlie!
Yep, and I'm a grateful member of Al-Anon, and I'm a grateful member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm a grateful member of, gosh, there were so many things. and some of you weren't here last night, and so I could do my entire thing from last night again if I could just remember what I said. But just to qualify a little bit, I want to tell you that I came to this program just like by mistake. I had no idea what I was doing here, and you guys didn't help. You gave me these slogans, and I'm a quick study because I grew up in an alcoholic family, and I learned you need to learn this stuff quick. And so I learned the slogans really fast and had no clue what they meant. I had them mostly inside out, upside down, and backwards because... I don't know if anybody can really remember what it's like when you first arrive. When I first arrived, you folks all knew how to say certain things, and you all said it the same way, and it all made sense to you folks, and you all smiled. And so I figured, well, I have to learn these things that are on the wall and on the little cards and on the little banners and on the little slips of paper and things. I have to learn those things, and I have to smile a lot. So I did. I was fine. And we discussed at lunch what fine actually means. And the first one is the F word. The second one is insecure, neurotic, and emotional. And that's what I was. And that doesn't evidently show up on any of the slogans anywhere. But I remember the first meeting I was at, the fellow who became my sponsor that night was running a meeting on Easy Does It. And I remember one of his statements was, you know, when I came here, I was like a freight train. Easy does it, 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 easy does it. And then somebody shouts out, but do it. And I thought, yeah, I don't think I follow this. And he said, that's not what it means. He said, it means easy does it. Easy, easy, easy. Easy does it, easy does it, easy does it. And that's basically what recovery is all about, is discovering I can't do any of these things permanently for good once and for all, no problem, I've got it. But I thought you were supposed to do that. I want to excel at this program. And when I got here, the first few slogans really made sense to me. Being an alcoholic, my deep desire was to be numb. I mean, I didn't like feeling anything. And the slogans tended to, in my head, from growing up in an alcoholic family, I was trained to be a certain way, and in my head, a lot of the slogans basically said, go numb, just go numb, it'll be all right, just go numb, don't worry, it'll be fine, we'll take care of it. And nothing was getting taken care of. I was feeling more and more churned up inside with a bigger smile on my face, and I was fine, fine, fine. And the trouble was that, you see, when I grew up with a room full of people like you, and like your parents, and like your siblings, and your brothers and sisters, and husbands and wives. I grew up in an alcoholic family. And in that alcoholic family, I had a whole bunch of people who taught me slogans with which to live a good life. A good, well-trained, ready-to-go, alcoholic life. And they were slogans like, easy does it, first things first, one day at a time, think stupid. Things like that, very very sensible things like don't talk, don't trust, don't tell, don't feel, made a lot of sense. You can only trust your family, don't wash dirty linen in public, don't wear your heart on your sleeve. There are some things no one else should know, you've got to have boundaries. There were all these wonderful statements being taught to me by alcoholics. Then I show up in Al-Anon, and I show up in AA, and I'm surrounded by alcoholics and wives and husbands and parents and daughters and children and whatever of alcoholics, and they're going to teach me how to be normal? Hold on. I want to back up a section here. Why should I listen to you again? You know, you got it pretty messed up the first time around. But I learned these slogans, and I learned them, and I tried my darndest to make them work. And my favorite one is, as someone is walking out of a meeting, they'll say, just hang in there and let go. Try that. Hang in there and let go. That's a good one. Yeah, yeah. And my sponsor was wonderful. He helped me go through these slogans, and he started with something I'm going to get back to, because everybody here probably knows the Serenity Prayer, right? And you even have a title for this festival. It's called A Journey to Serenity. Okay? Think about that. I'm going to journey, and I'm going to get to some place where it's just serene. And then I think, well, is that what that says? Think about it. We'll get back to that. Because in the process of my journey to serenity, I found Jack Daniels, Doors, lots of different kinds of beer. I was journeying to serenity, all right. And, you know, it was like, that. Serenity to me meant numb. And that's not what it means. Somebody last night mentioned I needed the serenity to see where I was going. So obviously, there's something going on, and I need a little window, I need a little tool. And somebody pointed out, serenity is a tool. It's not a location, it's not a destination, it's a tool. I need to be able to see where to go in the midst of a storm. That makes sense. And so the Serenity Prayer started to feel a little strange when it seemed like what I was trying to do was get numb by just pushing everything away or stuffing everything down. It didn't work for me. Let go and let God was a great one. You know, just let go and let God. To me, let go and let God was a weird slogan. I mean, I was really well trained in Al-Anon. I was probably 2 months, maybe 3 months in. And I had it down pat. I had learned all the slogans and I knew which pages to read and I was doing fine. And letting go and letting God seemed like a pretty reasonable idea. Because in my little mind, it meant, what the hell are you going to do anyway? You know, it's going to all turn to crap. It's going to fall apart. Might as well just screw it. That's what let go and let God meant to me. And nobody changed my mind about that as long as I could smile while I was thinking it. And I wasn't smiling inside. I was actually getting more and more miserable as I put on more and more smile. One day at a time. What the heck does that mean? You know, well, you know, don't stand with one day and one leg in tomorrow and one leg in yesterday and you'll pee all over today and you know, for all those wonderful things. One day at a time. I didn't know what that meant, but I repeated it over and over and over and over and over again, thinking that I was getting the message. You know, I thought that the slogans were the program. I thought the slogans were how I was going to get better. I thought the slogans were it. And I was reading the stuff. I was reading the ODAT. I was reading the other books in the program. I was reading the big book, too, in the AA step book. And I noticed that there weren't that many slogans in the AA stuff. But in the Al-Anon stuff, there were a lot of slogans. And my sponsor was wonderful. He said, for you, a lot of the slogans are designed to slow you down a little bit. Just slow you down a little bit. So you might be able to get a little bit of the program at the beginning. Just sit there for a second. Don't roll your sleeves up and start working at this. Sit down for a minute. Because the first three steps are ideas. And how long does it take to have an idea? And I said, instantaneous. He said, yeah, but in your brain it's so busy, you can't get an idea in there. And so you have to slow down and slow down. Now, I got to tell you a little story. It was a turning point in my recovery. We were at a meeting, and there were two or three reasonably new people there, and they were telling their war stories. They had been through absolute hell in the previous 3 or 4 weeks, and they were smiling, and they were repeating slogans every so often. And there was a fellow from the mental hospital wing of the general hospital that this was in, and he'd been brought down by a nurse, and the male nurse. And this poor guy sitting there in hospital clothes, listening, and I don't think he even really belonged there, but they brought him there anyway. And at the break, the nurse came up to me, I don't know why, and said, geez, you know, there's something really weird about this. And I said, what's that? He said, well, I was listening to these stories, and I don't understand why you people aren't absolutely raging mad. And I said, we let it go. 2 weeks later, my sponsor checked me into a hospital because I hadn't actually let anything go. I didn't understand what that meant, and there was a real good reason. And last night I mentioned this is a spiritual program. Every single one of those slogans has a little part that it's not stuck up there except for one of them. And the one that's there says, but for the grace of God. But for the grace of God, I've got no one to let this go to. How do I let go and let God if I don't have God? Let go and just let go. You know? Now what? Then it will turn to crap. But if I have found some way to find a power greater than myself, I have something to say, will you please take this? Will you please help me? You know, today we've heard many people talk about that point where they go, help me. You know, when my sponsor said you have to ask for help, I said, who do you ask? And that's the question that this program is all about. Who do I ask? It's been me or it's been my alcoholic family. Those are the people that I was allowed to ask. Who do I ask? I have to ask God. What do you mean, God? What kind of God? And last night I talked about the pine cone. That's the place to start. But this program will lead me into it. And the slogans, if I'm using my alcoholic mind to figure out what these slogans mean, I'm going to twist them inside out and they will hit me. They will beat me up. They will kill me. One day at a time, that means you've only got today. Screw it. My negative attitude that I brought in here was so horrible that there wasn't a good slogan out there that I couldn't twist around and kill myself with if I was given half a chance. I had a sponsor who wouldn't let me get away with it. He would say, what do you think easy does it means? And I went, well, don't put too much effort into it because it's probably going to turn to crap anyway. No, that's not what it means. That's not what it means. It means slow down, Charlie. You're going so fast inside. Your head is so busy trying to make everything work. And it's not your job. What do you mean? Well, if it was your job, you've been fired. And I don't think it ever was your job. I think if you go to that parking lot one more time, they're going to take your car away. You don't work there. You never had. It's not your job. You're not supposed to be running life. The first step says, I'm powerless. My life is unmanageable. And there's no step that says, now it's manageable, manage it. You know, it doesn't say that. First things first. I'm not stupid. I know what comes first. Yeah. A year sober, a year in Al-Anon, a year doing the program, and I reopen a photo studio that I had closed, and I reopen it, and I go down to the PIP printing place to get my business cards made, and the guy says, okay, just fill this out here, and he says, and you're making business cards up? I said, yeah. He said, what's the phone number? And I went, well, I don't know. He says, well, you probably ought to know what your phone number is before you make other business cards. It turns out it's really important for me to know that I have to ask what comes first. You know, I don't have that knowledge intrinsically because I'm not God. I don't know what comes first. I'm not taught to think of me and my sobriety and my serenity and my health coming first. I'm trained to think of everything out there first and then to heck with me. And so first things first is a really important slogan, but I need a power greater than myself. Start with a sponsor, start with a group, but I need something other than just Charlie to figure out what the heck comes first. And if I am like a typical adult child, I don't want anybody to know that I don't know. So I'm not going to say, I don't know what you mean by first things first. You know, there's so many weird slogans that came along that we used to play games with in adult children when we first started. But I want to give you the gift of the serenity prayer. And that is something that I said over and over and over again for probably 2 years before it hit me like a 2x4 in the forehead. And that was that it starts with God. It starts with higher power. It starts with a power greater than myself. Every one of the lines is not I. It's, God, grant me. I think I need. Could you send my way some serenity to accept things as they are? That's what it really means to me. To accept you as you are now. Not as I wish you were, or as I think you could be. I don't want to fall in love with your potential. I want to fall in love with you. I want to love you as you are. And I don't have the power to do that. But God can give it to me, because he can give me the serenity to put aside all the junk that my alcoholism and my crazy brain brings to every situation. It can give me the serenity to see through the storm. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. I would love everybody here to be some movie star and think I was sexy. That'd be cool. But the fact of the matter is, that ain't going to happen. The fact is, this is better. This is amazing. This group here is full of so much just great gifts. This is the gift. This is the reward. And my head won't let me have it unless I have some serenity. And I can't get serenity. I can't make serenity. I can ask for it. And if I get it, it's because of the grace of God. It's a gift. They say in AA, in a lot of places, an unmerited gift. I don't have to do anything but ask for it. And the second line in the serenity prayer is the same thing. God, it's assumed that you're going to ask God again, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. God, grant me the courage to change those things I can. Well, my sponsor said, well, what exactly can you change, Charlie? I can't change anything over there. I can't change you. I can't even really change me. What I can change is what I'm willing to do. And am I willing to do whatever God asks me to do in that serene little moment? Am I willing to do what God wants me to do in that spot? Now, maybe you don't like the term God. Try Harold. That'll work. You know? What does Harold want me to... You know the Lord's Prayer, right? Harold be thy name? Anyway, you can use whatever you want. We're not insistent that you decide what you want to... What we insist that you call God, or what we insist you call a higher power. But I have to get this stuff from that higher power, because I can't generate it by myself. I would like to. I'd like to be independent and alone and isolated and be happy at that, and that's alcoholism. I don't want to be alcoholic. I don't want to be a person who dies of this disease. I want to be a person who survives and then grows and lives and passes it by, who gets through it, leaves it behind. The only way I can do it is with that gift to have the courage to change what I can change. And I'm not going to know that unless I have a higher power that says, you can change this. Because I'm going to bash my head against brick walls trying to change them. That's what alcoholism tells me I'm supposed to do. In a family, in a relationship, in a job, just out there. You know, that person who cut me off. You know, I'll teach him a lesson. You know? Oh, sorry, officer. That kind of stuff. It's just amazing what kinds of things will go through my head if I'm in charge of what's going on and I'm not in charge. And the last one is, God, grant me the wisdom to know the difference. The difference about what? The difference about what can I really do? And what do I think I can do? Okay? Because I think I can move mountains. I think I can change everybody. I think I can make everybody happy. I think I can save everybody. I've always thought that was my job. I've always thought that I am supposed to take care of absolutely everybody and make sure they don't die, they don't get sick, they don't hurt, they don't suffer anything. That means I'm God. And I need the wisdom to know I'm not. I need the serenity to know that I'm not. Because I'm not going to let God in if I'm not serene. Now, again, serene is not numb. You know, think about it. If I'm in the middle of a tornado, I know I'm in the middle of a tornado. And the wind may be very, 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 very small in the middle of a tornado. But I know that right there is a tornado. Now, when I was young, I was in a hurricane, a huge hurricane. It was called Hurricane Carol. and it wiped out a whole section of the country, and houses were floating out in the ocean, burning. And it went right over our house. So we had the eye of the hurricane. Everything was a mess. Houses were flattened, things were on fire, boats were on lawns, cars were in the ocean. And it was the most beautiful, calm, quiet, warm, sunny day, except it was black in a circle all the way around us, about 100 miles across. That was serene right in the middle, but there was a storm going on. In my life, alcoholism, there's a storm going on. There's a storm going on with all my friends. They have alcoholism. They suffer from it. They have ups and downs. They have great roller coaster rides. Friends of mine have died, and there was nothing we could do about it. And I don't like that. But I need the serenity to be able to say, what can I do, God? Is there something I can do? And the problem with all this is that my disease, as a child of an alcoholic, trained me to be a real doubtful person. My first thought is, this isn't going to work. It's especially not going to work for me. I don't like the way I feel. I want it to go away. I don't like the way you make me feel. I want it to go away. I don't like what I'm thinking. I want it to go away. And what my solution was get numb. I was saying at lunch, there's this guy named Bob Earle, and I love his tapes. And he talks about when you're trying to figure out how to be where you're trying to get, think emergency room. You know, this is not good. Nice and numb is not good in the emergency room. You know, when everything goes like this, it's, oh, that's bad. Because life goes like this. It goes up and down and up and down and up and down and up and down. And when you try to make up and down into this, what you get is this, which is almost as bad as that. And that's true. Because that's the way my life was when I got here. I was in fib, I think is the term, or defib, or I needed to be defibbed. Anyway, I was just zooming, and yet I looked like I was asleep. It's so exhausting to keep that up. You know, my head was busy all the time with what needed to be done, and none of it could be done because I couldn't do it. Well, what could? You know, the steps to me are the key to the slogans, and the slogans are a guide to slowing down and stopping so I can get the first step. So that's the place where I screw up. Now, when we came into adult children meetings, and we sort of slid in on the side with adult children in 81, 82, we didn't know what we were. But what we knew was most of us didn't like a lot of those slogans because we were still doing them the way we thought we were supposed to do them to fit in to an alcoholic family. Like, let go and let God was, one day at a time, Everything was like, forget it, this family is always going to be this way or worse. Just give up. And what we were doing was taking charge. We weren't giving up, we were taking charge. And we came to adult children and we realized the thing that drove us in adult children Al-Anon was feelings. We were terrified of emotions. We didn't know they were okay, because in an alcoholic family they aren't okay. When a child, for example, 2 years old, has an emotion, it comes, it goes. It's so fleeting, it's so light, it's so real, it's right now. It's one day at a time. It's right this moment. It's like watch a child in a sandbox and they drop their ice cream cone. Wah! And then somebody brings a red truck over and it's gone. And it's red truck. And then somebody takes the truck and it's wah! And they give them an ice cream cone. It's like, oh. And it's gone. And I don't know how to do that. I'm holding on to the truck and the ice cream cone that are 2 hours old. I'm still in back there. I don't want to feel those feelings. And then when I feel them, and I start to feel them, I want to put them somewhere where I can't find them, and they don't ever bother me again because I want to let go. And what I'm really doing is holding on. I take those feelings, and I stuff them. So the very first adult child slogan that we came up with was, stuffing is for turkeys. And I'll tell you, you know, that worked better than any of the other slogans for me. Stuffing is for turkeys. Don't stuff it. What's going on with you? And sometimes we had to play games with that. I mean, sometimes we really had to work at it. We would go out and find sad movies and look at them because we didn't know how what we felt. We didn't know what the emotions were. We didn't know if they were okay or not. And there were people around, I can tell you, who said they aren't. It's not okay to cry. And then I heard this wonderful record that was for children. It was called Free to Be You and Me. And Marlo Thomas made it in, I think, in 1840 or something. Anyway, there's a song in it sung by Roosevelt Greer, who is a football player the size of this room. And he sings a song that goes, "It's all right to cry. Crying gets the hurt out of you. It's all right to cry. If you cry, you'll feel better." And we would play that for people who are 45 years old because they didn't know that. It's all right to cry. I'm not falling apart. I'm coming together. And it's painful. I'm supposed to cry when it hurts. Really? What I had to do when it hurt was be quiet and go to my room. And you'll hear people say that. When you feel better, you can come back and join the crowd. Oh, no thank you. You know, stuffing is for turkeys. I'm going to sit right here and cry if I feel like it. Another one was, don't should on me, and I won't should all over you. Should you, I ought to. I'm full of that. I have all that. That's what I hit myself with. My sponsor had a wonderful thing. He said, go get a stick. I said, what do you mean? He said, go get a stick. I got a pine cone for you. No, go get a stick. I go out and I get a stick. He'd say, now we'll go get a shovel and you're going to bury it in the backyard because I'm tired of watching you hit yourself with it. Huh? I didn't realize that that's what I did. I spent a lot of time going, whack, I should have this. Whack, I should have been that. Whack, I should have noticed. Whack, why did I say that? Whack. What does that make me? That makes me my own God. I am going to punish Charles for being a bad person. Whack. I don't remember that in any of the literature. You know, it's not in the slogans. Let go and let God hit me with a stick. You know, that's not, I think, what it meant. So we came up with this, don't shit on me and I won't shit on you. And I got a lot of help with that. Here's another slogan. There was a book that came out. It was a kind of a cool book. It said, what you think of me is none of my business. Now, if you're like me, I can't get that. That's a hard one for me to swallow after 34 years sitting in an alcoholic family being told, what I think of you is totally your business. You better pay attention because what I think of you is going to run your life for the rest of your life. But then one of our members said, you know what I've discovered? What I think of me is none of my business too. What do you mean? I am not supposed to be judging myself. I am not got the... That's not my job. I don't have the equipment. I don't have the sanity to judge if I'm good or bad, right or wrong. I need to, ask God to give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know that I don't have the judgment. I can only get it from a power greater than myself, and I better learn how to find that. So what you think of me is none of my business. I can get that, but what I think of me is none of my business is also very important. Because I'm going to get told by alcoholics how I ought to think of myself. All growing up, you should be ashamed of yourself. You want something to cry about? I'll give you something to cry about. I learn how I'm supposed to be is going to come from somebody else. And then I'm told I'm supposed to internalize that and automatically know how I'm supposed to feel, and I'm going to be using an alcoholic model as to how I'm supposed to think of myself. And how am I supposed to think of myself? Ask a sober alcoholic how they thought of themselves while they were active. Lower than whale manure. As low as a person can be. That's what an alcoholic generally feels like. And the bravado is just a bravado. It's just a cover-up. So I'm supposed to learn how to live and act and think the way an active alcoholic or an alcoholic thinks, and I'm supposed to internalize it so I do it automatically, I'm going to need a drink. You know? And that's one of the problems. Of course, if I feel hopeless and helpless and useless and rotten, I can't stand that. I need something to get in the way and say, hey, who told you this? Where did you learn this? And I can take those slogans, those wonderful God-given slogans, and twist them and beat myself up. So we had to come up with things that weren't automatic, that didn't sound like what Dad or Mom would say, and we had to use those in order to get to the point where we could realize that letting go and letting God is not... Sometimes it's, oh my God, there's nothing I can do. I love you so much, but I can't sit here and watch you drink yourself to death. Please get better, but frothy emotional appeal isn't going to do it. I need to have you find somebody who can look at you and tell you what's wrong, and somebody that you can't bullshit, and somebody that can't bullshit you. That's what it says in the big book. Frothy emotional appeal won't suffice, it says. I need to know that my frothy emotional appeal isn't frothy. It's real. I'm really, really sad that I can't fix you, but I can't. And I'm going to have emotion when I tell you that I can't. But I'm also not going to say, isn't there some way I can make you stop? That's something we learned in adult children. People who had been in Al-Anon for years, when they hit adult children, they were all of a sudden empowered to make the changes that are suggested in the Serenity Prayer. They got the courage. They found a higher power, then it wasn't that internalized alcoholic voice. Kind of cool. We had a lot of fun in adult children when we first started out, because we didn't know what we were, and we were playing games trying to find out what we should do. And playing with the slogans ended up turning on us. And what we found out was that the slogans were not Greek. And we didn't have to screw them up, but we had to rearrange how we thought about them. And we came up with stories to help us. For example, let go. Let go isn't doing something. Let go is not doing something. Think of, you don't have a lot of, well, maybe you do. Rope swings on trees into rivers and lakes. Ever seen those? Where you climb up a tree and you grab a rope and you swing down into the lake. Try doing that and not letting go. Okay? It doesn't work. You go out and it's great and somebody says, let go, and you go, no, and you come back and you hit the base of the tree, bang. And until you let go, you're not going to get the experience of flying through the air and landing in the water. But the letting go is very difficult. Don't do anything right now. Just let go. It's terrifying. But it's not as painful, it turns out, as banging into the bottom of the tree 25 times. And it's, you have to try that a few times to really believe it. You know, it's a tough thing, but letting go really is don't do something now. The thing you've been doing, stop doing that. The hanging on you've been doing, stop doing that. Letting go also means cutting both sides of the rope. You know, we used to talk about grappling hooks. That in an alcoholic family, in an alcoholic relationship, we would throw grappling hooks at each other. You know, the alcoholic would, the Al-Anoner would, and we'd both have grappling hooks. And then we would say, let go, and we would be happily cutting off their grappling hook and holding on to ours, or vice versa. And we'd be sitting there going, I don't understand why my life isn't changing. And you say, well, it goes both ways. You got to cut yours, and you got to cut his too, or hers too. You got to get rid of both of those things. And it's like, but if I do that, then what do I do? And the answer is, nothing. You let go. Now you get the result of the letting go, which is you don't know. God's in charge. You don't know how it's going to go. I didn't like that. I like to be in charge. But remember I said God is the deal? God is what straightens these slogans out for me. God is what straightens these slogans out for me. God is what gives me those experiences. Now, what kind of God? You know, how do I get this God? One day at a time, but for the grace of God, you know, let go and let God. God is thrown in there all the time, and then nobody spends a whole lot of time explaining what we're driving at. I like this guy, Milt, who has a tape, and he has this great thing. He says, you know, we don't care what kind of God you had. I'll give you an example. Guy goes to work, sits down at lunchtime and opens up his lunch pail, and he takes out a sandwich, and he looks at it, and he goes, bologna sandwich. I hate bologna sandwiches. And he eats his bologna sandwich. Buddy looks at him and goes, Next lunch day, Tuesday, he goes to work, opens up his lunch pail at lunch, takes out the sandwich, and goes, bologna sandwich. I hate bologna sandwiches. Eats bologna sandwich. Friend looks at him and goes, you hate bologna? He says, yeah. Next day, he comes to work, opens up his lunchbox, takes out a bologna sandwich, looks at it and goes, hate bologna sandwiches. Another bologna sandwich. And his friend says, why don't you get the missus to make you something else if you don't like bologna? He says, missus? I'm not married. I make my own sandwiches. They don't care what you bring for lunch. Just bring a lunch. We don't care what higher power you have. Just bring a higher power. Understand? It doesn't matter. What matters is that you do that. And how do I get that? The slogans? There's all kinds of little slogans that hint at the steps. Well, the steps are it. The steps are how you get to being able to understand these slogans. And pretty much all of the slogans that you're going to see, and I have a coffee mug at home that's got 35 slogans on it. You know, think. My sponsor said, Charlie, don't. And I agree with him. Thinking was a very big activity for me, and it's not a good idea. You know, when I'm in a room with the windows closed and the door locked, sitting in a chair thinking, it's time to get out of the room. As somebody said, I shouldn't go into my brain, into my head, without a flashlight, a friend, a higher power, and a pistol. But if I understand that this higher power is going to be gotten despite and then because of the slogans, these slogans become very important to me. I needed to know how to let go, and I had no clue. If I'm in charge of everything, I can't let go. If I let go, you might get sick. You might go out and drink. You might marry that guy. You know, all that kind of stuff that I think I'm supposed to be in charge of. If I let go, I suddenly realize all of these things that are happening because there's a higher power, and you have one too. It's kind of cool. When I went to that hospital, it was really funny. The lady at the hospital that was taking care of my case realized that I needed to be left alone with my craziness for a while, and she kept canceling my appointments to talk to her. And I started getting very nervous. And she said, I got something for you to do for your assignment. And I said, what's that? She said, I don't want you to read anything. I don't want you to think anything. And I don't want you to write anything for the rest of the time you're here. And I fell apart. Because that's how I functioned, was to get really busy and write stuff down and read stuff and think stuff. And I came to her in tears and I said, I don't understand what's wrong with me. And she said, you have to learn how not to help. You have to sit down and stop. And I said, but I'm really good at it. And she said, yes, you are. But it'll kill you. Because I wasn't helping the way you help. I was helping the way Charlie got numb. I couldn't let you be. I had to make sure you were okay. I couldn't let go because I didn't have a God. I was my God. And that's, to me, one of the most important slogans. That's an Al-Anon staple. Let go and let God, but for heaven's sakes, find a God. We don't care if it's bologna or peanut butter. We don't care. Just find one and latch on and practice and learn and grow it and nurture it, because that is what will allow you to let go. I have to know that there's water in that pool that I'm going to let go the rope of and fall in the pool. I have to. But I also have to let go, even if I'm not sure how deep it is. It's a leap of faith. And that brings me to a slogan, and I'm not even sure that there's a single slogan that refers to faith in the way that I'm going to tell you now. But if you listen to the Joe and Charlie tapes, I think that's one of the ones that uses this analogy. We don't expect anybody in the program, Al-Anon or any 12-step program, to arrive with deep faith. In fact, all we have to have is, in AA it says, all we have to ask ourselves is one simple question, do we now or are we even willing to believe? Not in God, but that a power greater than us, greater than Charlie, greater than each of us, could exist and would solve all my problems. Am I even willing to believe? If I'm willing to believe, I'm off and running. That's all that's needed. I've got my sandwich. I may not like it right now, but I can fix it later. You know, I can keep adding to it. So if I believe that, then faith is something that I need to know about. And here's a great description of faith that I think will help. If I'm new in a town, if I moved here, and I don't know anybody here except Richard and a few of you, and my car breaks down, I don't know, where should I take my car? I'll ask Richard, do you know any good place to get a car fixed? And Richard may say, well, you know, there's Joe the mechanic, and I've used him, and he seems pretty good, and seems to work for me. you could try him. He seems to be honest, and he doesn't charge too much, and you can go see him. And why would I take my car there? Because I'm willing to believe that Richard might not be lying to me. I'm willing to believe I'll probably survive it if it turns out Richard is lying to me, or maybe Joe isn't what Richard says, or such. But I'm willing to believe that this will be okay. And so I take the chance, and I believe this will probably work out, and I take my car to Joe, and Joe fixes the car, and he's cheap, and he's on time, and he doesn't cheat me, and it's great. I now have experience with Joe, my personal experience. I believed based on his experience. Now I have experience of my own, and now I can have faith that if I take my car to Joe, I'll be okay. I have faith in Joe. And that's the same thing as the higher power. I'm going to have belief that Richard has had experience with a higher power and it's worked for him and he hadn't been cheated and things have gone pretty well. Maybe I'll try Joe, the higher power, or Harold, or whatever I want to call it. And once I start to have experience with that, I start to see that when I let go and let Joe, or Harold, or God, or whatever I want to call it, do these things, man, I start to have faith this is going to happen more than just that once. I have personal experience that this power greater than me works. And I want to tell you, I am so good at this that I have to do it one day at a time. Because I can't do it 2 days in a row. I have to do it once, and I have to wake up in the morning and say, okay, please grant me the serenity to do this again, because I really enjoyed yesterday. I had some good stuff, and I had some not so good stuff, and this worked, and that didn't. But, you know, thank you for getting me through it, and can we do this again today? Wouldn't that be nice? That's what one day at a time means, is that I'm going to grow and learn one day at a time. I can't learn what's going to happen next Friday. I can't. I'm not there yet. I can only do what I'm doing. I can only be where I am. I can only do what I can do. Those are slogans we used all the time. You can only be where you are. That sounds a little limiting to me. Why can't I be four places at once? That would be a requirement in my family. Why weren't you home? My parakeet died when I was at boarding school, and I got blamed for it. Boarding school was 275 miles from my house. It was my fault, and I knew it. I should have been there, too. Both places. I'm beside myself. This program is really cool, too, because as I go through this program and get really, really, really good at it, I discover how not so really good at it I am. And I can give you an example. One of my kids ended up in the hospital, and it wasn't a pleasant time. And she was not that young. She was in her late 20s, I believe. And she ended up in a psych unit, and I was really upset because this psych unit doctor person was really mean to her, and he didn't like her. And he did things like give her sleeping pills at night and not write it down. And then in the morning when they tested her, they found barbiturates in her system and they locked her in a room and wouldn't let her out. And, you know, it was not a nice place. It was a horrible situation. And I was livid. And so I called a lawyer and I wanted to sue and have the place taken down to have that doctor, you know, punished. And I was mad. And I called my friend, the lawyer, who's in the program. By the way, if you want to get really, really riled up, call somebody who isn't in the program. But I called somebody in the program, and he listened, and he said, I'll make a call, go to a meeting. I said, but David, you don't understand, blah, 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 blah. And he said, go to a meeting, I'll call you later. And he called me later, and he said, I checked, they've crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's, there's nothing you can do, go to another meeting. I said, blah, 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 and it was going off my nut. Here's what happened while I was trying to run everything, because I hadn't let go. I took charge. While I was trying to spring her from this hospital and punish them at the same time and teach them a good lesson, she was walking down the hall and this woman came up to her and said, excuse me, are you a patient here? And she said, yes. She said, can I borrow you for a sec? Because I've got some of my medical students here and I want to do practice assessments on one of the clients. And she said, okay. Sat down in the room. They start doing practice assessments. When they finish, the woman says, you're a very interesting young lady. I think I want to handle your aftercare. You see, I'm the director of this hospital section. It's my hospital. And I'm going to find somebody to do your aftercare that's going to be fantastic. And that therapist that she found was fantastic. And she never had to go back to the hospital again. And he made strides with her that were unbelievable. And this guy lived 75 miles from where she lived, but in a different state. She never would have seen this guy, never would have found this guy, if Charlie had had his way. She would have been standing in the front of the place with a pair of suitcases, and we would have gone maybe through that 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 more times, because Charlie would have not let go. But my friend in the program pointed me in the right direction and said, time to let go. I didn't like it. It felt horrible. So when I said to that nurse in the hospital meeting that I was at, we let go, that was BS. Oftentimes it's, I had to let go, and it hurts like hell. Give me a hug. I need to come and talk to you. Can we have coffee? Man, this sucks. I hate letting go. Because I'm a human. I'm not a saint. And when I pretend to be a saint, these slogans can be used to make me worse. But if I understand I'm just a person, and I need help to stop trying to be God, stop trying to be a saint, stop trying to be perfect, these slogans help me. They say, sit down just for today. Call somebody. You know, let somebody know. Ask for help now. Ask somebody for help. And I guess I may be running slow, I may be running long. I've got 10 minutes more to go. I think the most important thing that I learned was that these slogans, oftentimes when I'm brought up in an alcoholic home, sound very familiar, and I need to know they're not. They're not what my grandfather was telling me. They're not what my father was telling me. My father was alcoholic, my mother was alcoholic, grandparents were alcoholic. They used these phrases. They're but for the grace of God, which means you're better than them. Do you know what it means? It means, but for the grace of God, the gift I've been given, I could be as confused as you are. But since I'm not, is there something I could do to help you? God, is there something I could do to help that person? That's my primary purpose in Al-Anon, to help families and friends of alcoholics. Is there something that I can do? The answer might be, nope. Sit. Stay. That might be my answer. But I don't know. Out of my head, yes, I have to. Roll up my sleeves, I have to fix it. And I need to know that these slogans, as presented by my family, have the same words in them, but they don't have the God in them. You know? My recovery is only because of a power greater than myself, the grace of God. But for the grace of God, I'd be sitting on a street corner with a little sign that says, got any money? I need booze. And that's not likely to happen now because I brought my sandwich. I know what I need. And you may not like the sandwich I've got, but it works. And you can bring your own. Now, we do have like almost 10 more minutes. Does anybody have a question or a suggestion or a comment that they'd like to make? Raise your hand. I actually will call on you. Nobody? Anybody want to write down a secret question? See, children of alcoholics don't like to announce that they actually have a question. And I used to do schoolwork, and we would send pieces of paper out and have everybody write a question or a comment, and then we'd fold them all up and shuffle them. And some of the questions you got were really cool, what do you mean by let go? And I hope that you got that information, which is that I have to sit down to let go. I have to stop to let go. Somebody mentioned On-Anon Anonymous. My daughter used that on me 5 or 6 years ago. You know, I think she made it up and you heard it. Anybody? Nothing? Nothing? Well, yeah.
Just comment that the one made up slogan that fits in with what I'm hearing from you and what I learned in this part of the world is,
yeah.
Don't just do something, sit there.
Yeah, that's a good one. And that's how slogan, I mean, I love that stuff. That's how we came up with these slogans. Somebody was saying, I just keep stuffing all my emotions and my head's going to blow up. And somebody turned around and said, stuffing's for turkeys. You know, and, oh, yeah. And that is true. Don't just do something, sit there. That's a great one. Because I always want to do something. I think it's up to me to fix it. And when I don't like not being able to. I don't like feeling like there's a power greater than myself. we were talking about steps earlier. My sponsor had me stand there and boil down the fifth step into one phrase. The exact nature of all my wrongs are, I think I'm God. Everything I did, I think God's not going to do the right job, which puts me in the position of judging God, which makes me God. And so everything that I've done wrong in my life, every screw-up that I've done, has been because I thought I was supposed to be God. Guess what? I'm not. You know? Anybody else? Well, I'd like to thank everybody for letting me sit up here and talk about the slogans. And if you have any questions or any suggestions, let me know. I hope you enjoyed it, and thank you very much. Thank you, Richard.